How many medals did you get?
I'll tell you a little story. We had an executive officer that wasn't a very popular guy. He just was aggravating and a real smart aleck and had no combat time. We went out as a platoon one time, all six teams. And just to kind of, we'd come right out of a recondo school that the Special Force, and we went out as a platoon. The Army pays you on the first of the month. I don't care the situation. They come pay, and at the time they paid in cash. Well, he flew a helicopter out there the 1st of November of 1967 and paid us. That was one of his jobs and one that he could barely handle. And as they left on the helicopter, there were two women with rice bundles come down, and he shot them and killed them. This is the type of guy he is, you know, just because he could. These are women just carrying rice. And so, unbeknownst to us, he puts himself in for the Silver Star for killing those two women. Mm. Well, not too much longer, another team leader and I caught a ride back to Onkay to pick up the mail. We had a couple days, and lo and behold, they're having an award ceremony at the company. And we see this captain out there. There's three guys getting, and one guy should have got 10 Silver Stars, Medal of Honors, but he got the Silver Star. He got the Bronze Star with V for Valor for killing those two old women. He wrote it up different, of course. We just looked at each other. We're team leaders. And, well, we had a meeting that night, and this is just 2 months in, and we said no medals. It was it disrespected the medal system so bad.
I thought that when a medal was awarded, you had to have witnesses beyond the soldier who wrote it up.
Yeah, yeah.
So what witnesses did he have? There were
some of his buddies.
Oh, and they verified?
Sure.
Oh, wow.
Our company commander verified it. He's the one that read the citation.
But then you and your friends wrote later.
Yeah, we just didn't write people up.
But it already had been awarded.
Yeah. Now, there's a couple of times I'd like to give a guy's medals because they just did unbelievable and crazy things that you just... And one guy especially, his name is Ray Clark. He's from New York. And I've looked for Ray and looked for him. His name is Ray E. Clark. There's 1,600 of them in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. So I've never found him. It was his last mission. In fact, I had tried to talk the S2 operations into not letting him go on this mission because he only had 4 days left. But no, they wouldn't do it.
So again, what medals did you receive?
Well, we made a command. We weren't putting anybody in for a Valor. I got the Air Medal because you got to make 16 combat assaults. And that's just coming off the helicopter going on there. You know, it's no big deal. I got the Purple Heart. Then I got 3 or 4 service ribbons from Vietnam. So, and then the one I'm most proud of is a combat infantryman's badge. Mm-hmm. You have to have proof of being in combat.
Yeah.
And that's...
These two women, Vietnamese women. But wasn't it time, though, that you didn't know who the Viet Cong was?
These were women carrying rice coming off.
And they didn't try to use women in combat.
Oh, yeah, that they did, but this was a blatant case.
It was obvious.
Yeah, yeah. These women were no threat. They had been to the river to wash their rice.
So you carry some scars in addition to the scars on your body.
Oh, yeah.
These soldiers that you saw, they were mangled, crying out for help, burned. Were you introduced to napalm at that point?
My first combat, I was leading a team, and we came in. It was a late evening infill where you go in late in the evening. and which we all hated, because here you are in the jungle trying to find a place to sit down and get down for the night. Anyway, we go in, and my point man is a guy named Gigliotti, who later became a Florida Highway Patrolman and then later became a televangelist. All of a sudden, he's in front of me. He's just gone. He's fallen in a foxhole. There's a little foxhole covered with a rice pad or a little rice mat. And we're right in the middle. And this is before Ted of 68, right before it. And we're right in the middle of a big NVA base camp. Well, it's still just light enough. I pull him out of there. And I have an observer with me who actually was part of the cadre of Ranger School, and his name is Avila. And here's an unlucky guy. He's been in World War II. He's been in the Korean War. He only has to go out in the field one time the whole year he's with me, and we sat down, and in a minute, he's in the middle of a huge base camp of NVA soldiers. You know, he... not a very lucky guy. So we get to looking, and there's a thatched hut right in front of us from here to that other wall. And right next to it, there's six AKs leaned up against this tree. And all of a sudden, the six NVA come out, and another six go in. And it's a mess. They're eating. A guy came out and threw up some rice. And I mean, Of course, it's night, it's jungle, and they're just right there. I'm thinking, what? I can't go on into the base camp, so I decide I just tell all my guys we're going to put two magazines in the hut, two magazines apiece, and then we're going up the hill, get out of here. So I went over to, and you know, you're just a kid. And I went over to Sergeant Avila, who's realizing, I'm sure, in his mind, here's one, how did this happen? And I said, Sergeant Avila, since we're Rangers, I think we ought to get online and attack this whole camp. And, of course, I was just kidding. He didn't think it was funny either, because he thought I was serious. But you just do that kind of stuff when you're a kid.
Right.
But anyway, we put two magazines in there, and... you know,
you fired into that shot.
Yeah, each one of my men put two magazines. We're in line, and we're those guys. We busted them up, and you never know.
So you hit a lot of body count from that.
Well, you know, now they want to count 100 when you tell them, and so I tell them. I also say, you know, we might not have killed any, but it was impossible for us. Mm-hmm. But that was just the start. So we start up the hill. All of a sudden, boy, they have a reaction for us. Here they come. And so I'm on the phone. I got an Air Force guy above me and a little bird dog, and they called us in. I said, hey, I got to have something in here quick. He says, all I've got's fast movers, and that's an F-100, and all they carry is napalm. And he said, I want you to get out in that clearing where we came in on the helicopter and stand there with the strobe light for a minute. I said, what did you say? Stand there with the strobe light in the middle of it. He said, that's the only way we can hit it. And I could hear the F-100 coming around. And I stood there, and he said, get up that hill. So we're going hard as we can. And that napalm hit, and it was probably 50 meters, maybe not. And it was incredible. It just is like a big wind just sucking that oxygen out of that jungle going to that fire. And those poor guys, and you could hear them screaming. And I put it in my mind that I wouldn't call napalm in again just by the chance of getting hit with it. And incidentally, when I went from Vietnam to Japan on a big where they take all the wounded, and we're 6 liters high, you know, a C-141, it holds 1,100 guys or something. Well, there's 12 guys from the 101st that got in a napalm, and they were burnt. Six of them died on the way to Japan. And you suffer, you know, nothing stops a burn pain. That napalm is a horrible weapon.
What is it? Explain napalm. And the.
It's a plus-plus gasoline. It's gasoline with igniters in it that makes it just for somehow burn hotter than gasoline, but that's what it's carried in. It's a big 1,000-pound bomb with gasoline and whatever the it, and I mean, it just, the flash point on it is incredible. And it just, it's a horrible weapon. Effective, really effective, but it's horrible.
Of what you've just talked about, the losses, the sacrifices, these stories stay with you. I'm bringing them up to you today, and you think about it. I don't know, it probably does. You don't think about it every day, but you may be reminded of it. Did you have dreams about what happened to you, and even after you were separated from the Army?
You know,
nightmares.
When I first got out of the Army, I couldn't sleep. It kind of surprised me, but I just couldn't sleep. And I wasn't having nightmares or flashbacks or anything, but I just couldn't sleep. That lingers to today.
Not being able to sleep?
Yeah, just if it weren't for the psychotropic sleep medicine that they have now, Ambien and Theraquil and all those things, I wouldn't sleep much. Just, I don't know whether my mind just shuts down or what it is, but it surprised me. And when I got out in 68, the Veterans Administration was a very scary spot. I mean, you were risking a lot to take. It's completely different now. It's the best medicine I'm around. And
but you weren't getting proper care back then?
In the 68, like, I had malaria in April of 68, I had malaria. Well, I had a relapse when I got home at Thanksgiving. And I went to the Veterans Administration in Muskogee, and I had to sit the doctor down and tell him the treatment. He had no idea. He actually was a pretty good doctor, but one of only two in that whole hospital. He was an alcoholic. He came in every day, and he had a pint of Old Crow carrying it. You know, he didn't hide anything. He operated on me once. Under my arm, I had a piece of shrapnel get caught in a lymph node, and they had to take that out.
Do you think he had alcohol in him when he did that?
I'm sure it did. I'm sure it was dripping off his chin.
Wow.
But he, you know, of course, he's overwhelmed. He's one of two doctors in that whole hospital, so that's not many. In the receiving area. Now, I don't know how many are in the treatments area, but there's only two.